Parshas Korach, Tafshinayim Beis. Korach, page 820, for those with the art scrolls here. Nice round number, 820. I think we've had a round number like that in a while, 820. Okay, what's the gematria of 820? Nothing much. Taf Beis. Anything else? I'll come up with something later. Okay, 820. Vayika Korach, and Korach took. What did he take? Nobody knows. Nobody knows. The Medrash loves to ask this question, and the Mefarshim loves to answer it. As Rashi says, Parsha zu yafin nidreshes midreshes Rabbi Tanchuma. The Tanchuma talks all about it. What does vayikach mean? Rashi doesn't hold back from giving his own interpretation or his own vote for what it means. Lakaches atzmo. Lakaches atzmo. That's an interesting one. He took himself. What does it mean he took himself? Lios nechlak mitzalchid. He took himself out of everybody else. He took himself out of the common group, the Jewish people. So, first of all, I always point out the two special parshas to me for a young Israel Volk Park. Number one is Vayigash, was when I tried out. And number two is Korah, is when my first Shabbos was. Always nice to remind myself of the fact that I took over as the rabbi on Parshas Korah when he was trying to take over as the rabbi. So I appreciate that. what I spoke about Shabbos morning is always an interesting introduction, can serve always as an interesting introduction to Parshas Korach. When did this happen? We know the story of Korach, right? We know Korach is challenging the leadership of Moshe Rabbeinu. Hildi, I put English on it just for you. We know that Korach is challenging the leadership of Moshe Rabbeinu. And therefore, we would expect that Korach, maybe he just learned about the leadership of Moshe Rabbeinu. Did he just learn about Moshe Rabbeinu being leader? Presumably not, right? We're already in Parshas Shlach. We're already in Parshas Korach. So there are those who say that the actual episode of Korach happened way back when? It happened way back in the Midbar, after they got out of Mitzrayim. Maybe it happened after they got out. I don't remember exactly when the Mefarshim say it happened. But many will say that it happens out of order. That the Torah is actually, we're still in the Chumash, Hilly. We'll get there. On page 820, for those of us still in Chumash, that Korach actually happens way back when. Why is it put over here? Maybe to juxtapose it to other things that were going on with the Jewish people. The truth is that this doesn't fit very neatly with a lot of the other midrashim we have in the Parsha, but there is such an opinion. The Ramban believes that it actually wasn't until right now, in terms of the chronology we're familiar with, post the spies. And then the question is, well, why is it that all of a sudden Korach perks up and says, hey, it's not so fair that Moshe is the leader? What, he didn't realize that for the last year? Right, the last year, they've been walking in the desert for a year now. All of a sudden, he perks up and says, you know what? I want to be one of the Kohanim. I want to be like Moshe Rabbeinu. So first of all, it's very nice. It's okay, so what happened? What precipitated it? Good. Okay, so good. So it's something. It's not extraordinary if we can explain what happened. But if he's just sitting around there twiddling his thumbs, and all of a sudden he comes up and thinks, "Hey, Moshe Rabbeinu is the leader. I want to be the leader." No, rather something else must have happened. Something must have precipitated or triggered this response in Korach. So the Ramban gives a fascinating answer, which I used in my first Rasha. I'm going to pass this back to Reizel. And the answer that he gives is that on the heels of the Meraglim, what happens with the Meraglim? So as we know from last week, the Meraglim give over the spies, give over this unfortunate report about Eretz Yisrael to the extent that they have to be punished. What's their punishment? They all die. Then no one can go into the land of Israel. Wait a second. No one can go into the land of Israel. Moshe, didn't you tell us something else? Moshe, didn't you tell us that we were all going to go in to Eretz Yisrael, Chalul B'Divash? Now you're telling us we're not going to go in? So says the Ramban, maybe there are other things that you told us that aren't true. Maybe Moshe Rabbeinu has been giving us a whole narrative which isn't true. Maybe I should be the leader of the Jewish people. Moshe Rabbeinu shouldn't. Either because he's lying or because, you know, maybe he, you know, his position is also ill-gotten. Alternatively, and I think the Ramban, and this is definitely what my drasha was about, but I think the Ramban also says I'd have to look it inside, but the Ramban explains that what happens when you tell the people whose perspective is that we're all working towards something, whose perspective is we're all going towards a specific goal, we're all working towards something together, and then you tell them, you know that goal that you're all working on? Not going to happen. No more goal, no more destination, nothing to work on together. Then what's the whole point? Why am I going to subjugate myself to everybody else if we're not working on anything together? When we have a common vision, a common mission together, so then we will forego our own desires for the sake of the kahal, for the sake of everybody else. I'm not going to care about what I want so that we can all do something together. And that was the purpose of the Mishnah, to bring Jewish people together. But now you're going to tell me that there's nothing combining us, there's nothing common which joins us together in the same mission, where we're all working together and sort of, you know, foregoing our own honor for the sake of the national honor. You're telling me there's no such national honor? So now we're all just going to split up. We're all going to individually look into what we can do for ourselves as opposed to what's going to be good for the Jewish people. And that's why in the heel on the heels of the Meraglim, Korach speaks up. Because specifically after Moshe Rabbeinu says, there's no more Eretz Yisrael, there's no more joint mission of these people. In the next generation, fine. But these people aren't going into Eretz Yisrael together. They're not working together on a shared mission together anymore. And therefore, Korach says, well, if there's no national identity, then I am foregoing my own honor for, if right, I'm not sacrificing on behalf of anything greater than myself, so then all I have left is what's in it for me. And that's where Korach comes from. It's that lack of vision or that lack of communal mission. And I spoke about that my first Shabbos here, that sort of the importance of creating a mission for the shul and creating a vision for the shul and working together to grow the shul as opposed to just working for our individual benefits. So that's always a good introduction to where Korach is coming from. Most Mepharshim and most drushas on this week's Parsha are all talking about what did Korach do wrong. And it's not about, I'm not criticizing that. That's perhaps the most important message that we can try to figure out from Parshas Korach. What did Korach do wrong that we can learn from to not do? You people might be familiar with the famous Medrash talks about, Rashi talks about it, the tittus, right? People know he came with the blue garments with all 250 people and said, do we still need to put tchelos on? And Moshe Rabbeinu says, yes, you still have to. And what about and Rashi doesn't say this one, I don't think, but he says, what about a room that's full of Sifrei Torah? Does it still need a mezuzah? And Moshe Rabbeinu says, yes, it still needs a mezuzah. The truth is that it's a room full of Sifrei Torah. No one lives there, so the odds are that it doesn't need a mezuzah because you only need a mezuzah place that people live, but okay, not for now. But the point is that there are a bunch of different midrashic and post-midrashic explanations or attempts to try to figure out what was Korach's problem, what did he do wrong, and how are we supposed to learn from it. So as we go through the parsha, that might come, you know, crop up into my mind again. What we have here, by Kach Korach b'Yitzhar b'Kass ben Levi. This is page 820. V'Dasan v'Aviram b'nei Aliyah v'Om b'Pels b'nei Reuven. We know why Korach was into it. It was his whole. It was his whole purpose, or that was his whole argument. Was he wanted to be the leader? What about everybody else? Where did Dasan v'Aviram and Om b'Pels come from? So the truth is, the last two words in the pasuk are the most operative words. B'nei Reuven. Let's see, as Rashi said, I think he says it. B'shvil shahaya shevet Reuven sharoi b'chaniyasam teimana shechein l'kahas. That Reuven lived right next to Kahas. Ubanav hachonim teimana nishtatsu im korach v'machlakoso. And specifically, the children of Kahas that lived right in adjacent to Korach's tent are the ones that ultimately joined together. And this is where we have the phrase, Oy l'Rasha, Oy l'Shcheino. Is that what Rashi says? Yeah. Oy l'Rasha v'Oy l'Shcheino. Woe is to the wicked and woe is to their neighbors. Right? This is what makes good neighbors is a good fence, right? You have to make sure you're not too associated with people that you shouldn't be associated with. It's kind of an interesting concept that if we know that this is the reality, so then should they have been punished? So there's clearly some kind of negligence involved also. It's not just like, oh, you're their neighbor, sorry, tough luck, now you're going to be killed. But just because there's a reason for why you did something wrong doesn't mean that you shouldn't have held yourself back, which we'll talk about soon. So that's Dasan and Aviram. And On Ben Pelos, who we'll talk about soon also. And then, 250 men, why are you taking all the honor? Rav lachem, it's too much for you. because the entire people are holy. Uvesocham Hashem, and within them is Hashem. It's kind of an interesting phrase based on last week's parsha, where Moshe Rabbeinu says to the people, you know, Hashem is not bikir bam or bikir bechem. What was his word? Bikir becha. That Hashem is not among you. Here they're saying Hashem is among you. Umadua tisnas tu al kahal Hashem. Why are you raised above the Jewish people of the congregation of Hashem? And which is great. Vayishma Moshe, vayipol al panav. Moshe falls down. Why did Moshe fall down? When it came to other things, what did Moshe do? He talked to Hashem. He fought on their behalf. What did he do last week in the Meraglim? He says, yeah, he argued with Hashem, kill me if you're gonna, you know, kill these people. Kill me. And then by the Egel Azav also, right? Mechaini na mesifrecha, right? Wipe me out from your book. All of a sudden, Korach has this, you know, claim to power, and he says, oh, I can't do this anymore. I'm out of here. So Rashi tells us, what were the three big sins of the Jewish people? We know two of them, right? The Egel Azav, the spies, and the one in between. And Parshas Pa'alos was the slav, I think. Yeah, the Misonanim. The Machlok is what the Misonanim was. But we have the spies, we have the Egel Azav, we have the spies, and then we have the Misonanim, the complainers. So that's three. Hashem, Moshe Rabbeinu says, okay, I'm out of here. Three is too much for me. And now three strikes, you're out. Number four, I'm out of here. That's number four. Yeah, it was a kasha I had a couple years ago for the week. I don't remember. But yeah, there are other times. What else does it say? I think it did say it at some point by the Meraglim. That's part of the question. It said by Yipol Alpanov with Yehoshua also by Yipol Alpanov last week by the Meraglim. So that was my kasha. I don't remember the answers, but that was the kasha. But either way, So that's what Rashi says. Here's number four. Number four is one too many times, and that's why he falls on his face. Okay. Tomorrow you will know what Hashem will bring, and you will understand Hashem's true nature, and you'll see that he differentiates himself from you. So those do the machtos, with the pan and the fire, the whole thing. And then Moshe Rabbeinu says the argument. It's kind of interesting. First he says, tomorrow you'll figure this out. But for the time being, Vayomar Moshe HaKorach, there's a Pasuk Ches on 8:22. Shimuna b'nei Levi. Listen to me, the children of Levi. It's not all of Levi, it's just him. It's just Korach and his people, whoever those people are. Hama'at mikem. Is it too little for you? Right, it's interesting because Korach is not a nobody. Right? Korach is part of the Levium. He is someone who works in the Beis HaMikdash, who works in the Mishkan. He does have a position. Rashi points out that there were other positions that were higher that he could have gotten that he thought he was worthy of getting, even within the Levites. But even so, he's still not nobody. He still has a position of somewhat prominence within the Jewish people. So he says, "Hama'at mikem, is it too little for you? Ki hivdil eschem Yisrael eschem yadas Yisrael, that Hashem already distinguished you from the Jewish people. La'akriv eschem elav, he wants you to become closer to him. La'avodas avodas mishkan, to do the work of the mishkan. V'la'amod lefnei hadah, and to stand in front of, before the congregation. Lishar sam, what does the word lishar sam mean? To serve them. How do the Levi serve the Jewish people? So you could say they're the teachers, but here it implies that the teaching that they did, or the shar sam that they did, was while they were lifnei ha'idah, they were all standing in front of the Jewish people. What does Rashi say here? Lashir al hadukhan. This is referring to the Levites choir. I don't know what they call themselves. Someone's got to come up with a nice choir name for the Levites. But they had a choir. The Levites would get up every day and they would sing. It was a free concert. What? The Levi boys choir? Levi boys choir, yeah, okay. All right. Better than nothing. Better than nothing. All right, we'll come up with something. I don't know. But the Levi boys choir, They stood up there and then they sang. What exactly would it mean for them to sing Lishar Sam? What does Lishar Sam mean? Lishar Sam, to serve them. How are they serving the Jewish people? By singing. It's a free concert. It makes them feel better. It's a good sounding thing. So the Chasam Sofer actually points out, I wrote about this a couple of years ago, that that really all the Jewish people were supposed to sing. They were all supposed to be part of the choir. And then they goes up, so the Levites were the ones that were going to do it. So Lishar Sam means they serve the Jewish people because they're taking care of their responsibility, that kind of thing. And now you want to also be Kohanim. And now you're opposing Aaron also. And then an interesting thing happens. We'll talk about this in a second. Moshe sends for who? Dathan and Aviram. Dathan and Aviram. Are those the only people you have to send for? Who else do you have to send for? Some of the Korah. And what about On Ben Peleth? So it could be that Moshe Rabbeinu is trying to peel away the supporters of Korah. This is a fascinating pasuk. What does it say? They use the same word hama'at, right? They're using the same word as Moshe Rabbeinu. Hama'at mikem. Is it too little for you, Levites, that you become that you're only part of the choir? And then they're using to him hama'at ki elisenu. Is it not enough that you took us away from where? You took us out of eretz zavas chalav u'devash. You took us away from. I don't really know. This is actually a machlok, because I think I had to understand this topic. Is this referring to Israel? It could be referring to Israel, because maybe it's in the aftermath of the spies, if you explain that this is the aftermath of the spies. So maybe it's referring to the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu is preventing them from going to Israel. You could say. But most understand that this is referring, I think, to Mitzrayim. The Jewish people, or these people, are saying, you took us out of Egypt, which was itself a land flowing with milk and honey. They're flipping the script. Moshe, it's exactly the opposite of what you told us. You told us we're going to the place of the land of milk and honey. You took us away from the land of milk and honey. We should have stayed in Egypt where we could sit around with our meat pots and with our fish and with all the cucumbers, the gourds, whatever else I said earlier. And it sounds very sarcastic, yeah. Meaning it's sort of like they're being very oppositional, not only in the fact that they're opposing his leadership, but also in the way that they're saying it. It's almost as if they're mocking what Moshe Rabbeinu said. Very good. Yeah. There have always been people. You did not bring us to the same place of Eretz Zavas Chalavash. You didn't give us a field or a vineyard. Right, this supports the Ramban's position that this is happening in the aftermath of the spies, because it's clearly part of their sentiment. You're not taking us anywhere. I'm still in the Chumash. We're still on 8:24. Oh, I'm just reading through the Pesukim. And then Vayichar Moshe Ma'od, this is the top of 8:24 verse 15. Moshe gets very upset and he says to Hashem, "Al Tefen Al Mechasan," as if Hashem needs Moshe Rabbeinu's instruction. Moshe says, "Don't take their sacrifices. Lo chamor achad mehem nasasi, v'lo hariosi es achad mehem. Do not turn to their offering. Not taking even a single donkey of theirs, nor have I wronged even one of them." Kind of interesting that Moshe Rabbeinu feels the need to defend himself to Hashem of all addresses. Moshe doesn't have to defend himself to Hashem. Hashem knows that. Kind of interesting. Again, explaining what exactly it should do with the fire pans. And then Hashem says, this is in Shlishi, the Pasuk Chas, the 20th verse here on page 824 in the middle. Get away from these people. I'm going to wipe them out right now. And Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron fall on their faces. And you'd expect them to say, don't do it. What do they say? Don't do it to everybody. Vayomru, vayomru. And they say, Kel Elokei Haruchos L'chol Basar Ha'ish echad yechetav yakol ha'eda tiktof. Right? So Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron understood that Hashem meant that that Aaron and Moshe get away from the entire Jewish people, not just from this crowd, but from the entire Jewish people. And me and my friends used to use this argument all the time. When a teacher would try to punish our class because of something that someone did, they'd say, "You're going to punish all of us because he did that? Just punish him." That's not how it works. It's a package deal. So this is Moshe's argument to Hashem also. And then Hashem agrees. Okay, get everybody away from these people, and then I'll just wipe out these people. And you can see again here in Pesukim Chav Gimel and Chav Dalet, Adabra Hashem Moshe Leimor, Dabra Kolida Leimor, Hey Alumi Saviv, Limishkan Korach, Dasan Vaviram. Get away from Korach and Dasan and Aviram. Who's missing here? Who else is there? Close. Owen ben Peles, Bnei Reuven. Owen ben Peles isn't here anymore. Okay, we'll come back to that soon. Lest you get wrapped up in everything that they did. What do Dustin and Aviram go do? They stand right at the tent. We're not going anywhere. You wanna fight? Come to us. Vayomer Moshe Bezos Teidu, and this is how you're gonna know that Hashem sent me, Shalachani. Moshe is proving himself. This is not because I thought so. It's not because I wanted this. It's not my desire to be the leader. Hashem asked me to be the leader. If everybody dies, so then you'll know that it's not Hashem if these people die in the way that most people die, so then you'll know that I'm not in any way special. However, if, however, there's something out of the ordinary that happens, and the earth opens up and gathers them up and swallows them whole, you'll know that these people were fighting against Hashem. Interesting, the word kechalo so is written without a vav, but there's no drasha here from Rashi like he usually does. But nonetheless, after he finished talking, Vativa Kahazama, right after. The earth split open, Vativ Tacharthas Pia, Vativ Lo Samas Batahem, and it ate them up in their houses. There is a question whether or not the children of Korach were involved in this too. We know that later on, I think in Pinchas, when it goes through the genealogy of the Jewish people, it says, Bnei Korach Lo Mesu, that the children of Korach didn't die. So what does it mean here? But that the whole house died. So it either means one of two things. Either it means everybody but the children of Korah. As we know, there are prakim of Tehillim that are lam nasech livnei Korach mizmor, right? We say one of them on Rosh Hashanah. Right? So right before the shofar, I think we say one of them. So and part of that is what exactly they learned from this episode. Alternatively, there's Gemara, I think it's in Parak HaChelet in Sanhedrin, where it says that the children of Korach are at the precipice of Gehenna, that they were also swallowed up, but they didn't go all the way down because they did tshuva, and that's why there's a story or something, you can hear them singing at the gates of Gehenna. I don't know, something like that, because they're right at the top of the opening. They're not all the way into the ground like the other people of this group. Okay, and then they all die, or they die by swallowing them up. The Eisha Sami Es Hashem, and then a fire comes. And the other 250 die by fire. Different levels of association are different levels of punishment. So this is basically the scene of Korach and the aftermath of Korach. And then if you look at page 828, you'll see at the bottom there are other things about this fire also being problematic. But nonetheless, at the bottom of 8:28, you'll see another sort of test. Take all the sticks together, and what happens? You remember what happens here? The one for whom I choose, their stick will blossom. So whose stick blossoms? Aaron, meaning that Aaron should be the Kohen. Wait a second. Didn't we already learn that Aaron should be the Kohen? Why do we need another test for Aaron to be the Kohen? So I think the Rashbam explains, if I remember correctly, that the test of Korach v'Adaso and the fact that they all died might have just been the fact that Korach v'Adaso were bad people. So that's a sore meirah. Hashem said, these are definitely not the leaders. But does that mean that Aaron is the leader? So here you have to prove that Aaron is the leader, as opposed to before, where it's proving that Korach and Adaso are not the leader. Here Korach is the leader. Okay, kind of an interesting take on it. Okay. And then the rest of the parsha is basically just reiterating the fact that the Kohanim get all these gifts, and the Levites even get gifts. It's establishing the hierarchy of how we take care of different people in B'nai Yisrael. So that's the gist of the parsha, even though I went through the last one in two sentences. You can look into all the sort of the Chavdal, Matos, Nehuna, go through all the different gifts that the Kohanim get. But back to our original questions that we mentioned in passing here. If you look at source number one, you'll find that the Parsha starts off telling us that Korach v'Adaso, who was Korach v'Adaso? So we have Korach, we have Dathan and Aviram, and we have Ohn ben Peleth. So when it comes to Korach, we hear about him a few more times. When it comes to Dathan and Aviram, we hear about him a few more times. But as you notice in the second source, go take away, you see in the translation here, speak to the community and say, withdraw from about the abodes of Korach, Dathan, and Aviram. Sorry, that hey is supposed to be at the beginning of the phrase. Go away from Korach, Dathan, and Aviram. What about Ohn ben Peleth? Did he not have a house? Was he not part of the problem? Moshe rose and went to Dathan and Aviram, the elders of Israel following him. He addressed the community saying, move away from the tents of these wicked men and touch nothing that belongs to them, lest you be wiped out for all of their sins. So that's what happened. Vayalu. Me'al mishkan Korach, Dathan, Aviram. He says, if they went away from Korach, Dathan, Aviram, and now Dathan, Aviram had come out and they stood at the entrance of the tents with their wives, their adult children, and their little ones. As in the shame, b'neim v'tapam. Tapam is little kids. They're not going anywhere. They didn't go away from their own tent. So the question is, what happened to Ohn ben Peleth? I talked about this last year. Good. So we'll look at that right now. What happened to Ohn ben Peleth? I remember talking about this from the pulpit, and one of the cardinal sins that I've established for myself is to never speak and not write down what I say. But I did not write down what I said last year, and I can't remember for the life of me what I said, which is a problem. It's a real problem. And I know I laugh about it, but I really feel bad about it. Like, now I wish I knew what I said last year. If anyone remembers what I said last year, Parshas Korach, so please let me know. I know I talked about Ohn ben Peleth. And I know I talked about his wife, but I can't for the life of me remember what I said. But we'll talk about her again today in a semblance of a kapara to try to figure out something that I might have said. No, I'm not worried about you. I know you don't mind reminding. I don't know. I know that you don't mind whether or not you remember. But I don't remember. That's the problem. If you don't remember, that's okay. You cannot remember. I need to remember what I said. David Barth maybe remembers. You get worried looking in the mirror and seeing the white hair in your beard, and you figure what else is going with it. You know, so I can't remember what I said last year. Maybe it's because it's an Iber year. You know, the Gemara tells us that the time for remembering is 1 year. If you don't remember something after 1 year, so then that's Hashem made it that way. It's really referring to when difficulty passes. But because of the extra Adar, so maybe I'm justified. I don't remember what I said last year because it's 13 months as opposed to 12. But okay. What do you say? You're 1 hour. Okay. I once read a book that said that that's a misnomer. When you get old, you forget things just as much as you forgot when you were younger. It's just people stigmatize it. I don't know. You can tell me. I don't know. But so I don't remember what I said. But here's the Medrash. Really, Gemara. It's also in the Midrash. Interestingly enough, if you were to look at for this in the Midrash, as I did, it's not a comment on Ohn ben Peleth. It's commented only later on where it doesn't mention Ohn ben Peleth, meaning. The only time we ever find his name in the Parsha is the first pasuk. That's the only time his name is mentioned in the entire parsha. And yet, that's not where the Mezrash comments. The Mezrash comments about Onan and Pelas later on when Korach gets punished. And the Mezrash says, where's Onan and Pelas? What happened to Onan and Pelas? So here, says the Gemara in Sanhedrin. And I included the previous drasha in the Gemara because we're going to come back to it. Dasan was a specific name, Datan. Why was his name Datan? And as we know, and you might have known this from other experiences, that the names that people have are given to them as almost as a product of divine influence, meaning Hashem, the Gemara tells us, gives parents the ability to intuit about their child what name would be befitting for them in that time. And whether we can understand that or whether we think we can best assist them, you can't. And the question is just what about your name defines who you are. So the Gemara here is not necessarily saying that Dasan and Aviram were destined for bad qualities because of their names, but rather that there's something about their names that in retrospect we can look at and say, oh, this is why they were named that way. That's how I'm understanding the Gemara. Dasan, why was his name Datan? This is the bottom of the source sheet on source number 3. The Gemara in Parakachay, like Dasan Sha'avar al Das. What does Dat mean? Dat means religiosity. I'm sorry, there's a translation here. It goes on to the back of the page. The Gemara begins to interpret the name of the Korach's court. Dasan and Aviram, something that's fine. Datan is one who violated the precepts Dat of God, right? Where else do we find the word Dat? You've definitely heard it before, hopefully many times. Hare at Mikudesh, leave it to Bazu, ke Das Moshe of Yisrael. Within the religiosity, within the laws, the precepts of Moshe and Israel. Same word, das. You've heard the concept das Torah? Might be the same thing. But some people say das Torah. Okay, I think it's das Torah, but okay. And al das kel, that he violated the precepts of Hashem. Aviram she'iver asmo me'asos tshuva. Iver is a weird word. It means, aver, it means like a limb. Here it means to brace himself. He braced himself away from doing tshuva. Very creative interpretation. And what about own? Anyone know? What does the word own mean? Remember the word own? No, that's oven with an ayin. Close. We've had it a few times in the Torah. Okay, well, that's what the Gemara is going to say. But what is the word onain connected to in terms of the word own? Well, this is his person named own. Who else is going to be named own? Rachel's son. Right? Binyamin's name was supposed to be Ben Oni. Remember, I think we talked about this. Right? Ben Oni. Binyamin was supposed to be named Ben Oni. And Yaakov changes it. Her last dying wish, call him Ben Oni. And he says, sorry, Ben Yamin. Right? So what does Ben Oni mean? Either means my struggle. Good. Ben Oni, because Rachel died in that childbirth. And she said, you should call him the son of my childbirth. Sorry, the son of my struggle, meaning the childbirth. And Yaakov's response is, Ben Yamin. No, we should call him Ben Yamin. Why? What do we say over there? It's based on the Ramban. That the Ramban says he just changed the words into a more positive sense. Hafach lem letova. I think, I don't know if that's the exact words, something along those lines. That Yaakov made it into the positive. Not to say necessarily that Rachel's was negative, but that it was focusing on the negative aspect of her perseverance. There's a struggle that she overcame. Ben Oni, and Yaakov changes it to Own, meaning to Yamin, meaning strength. Your right hand is your strength. So here also, what was Own? So if you were to ask me, what was Own? I would say that Own, maybe if we were to say that he separated himself from the people, he was strong. He stayed, he went back on his convictions, and he said that I'm not going to be part of Korach's rebellion. The Gemara takes a different view. And it uses the word own, and the reason, sorry, I left the piece out there, that we know the word own doesn't only mean struggle, it also means strength. Where do we know that from? From Reuven. What does Yaakov call Reuven when he gives a bracha to him? Reshis oni, the beginning of my strength. Gemara talks about it in other ways, but fine. So the word own can either mean strength or it can mean struggle. And here the Gemara says, the own sheyashav ba'aninut. What is aninut? What does it mean to be an onain? Could mean poverty or struggle or difficulty, but what specifically aninut is a halachic status.
In between, before the
Good. Before a relative is buried, and thereby you become an avel, before you're an avel, you become an one. And it's a very difficult position because on the one hand, you're supposed to be mourning the relative, but on the other hand, you're supposed to be taking care of the relative in the burial, and that's why you don't do mitzvot, you don't do anything, you're basically in limbo zone, trying to mourn, but you have to take care of the deceased first and foremost. So therefore, you're considered an onin at that moment. And there are all these questions that some may be familiar with in terms of, you know, if you're waiting too long, when do you switch over from the case of being an onin into an avel? Let's say the body is taken, you know, to a different place, and you're no longer responsible for the burial, you know, the burial activities. So does that mean that you're still an onin? You have to wait till they're buried, or are you basically already in avel at that point? So that period is a very interesting period halachically. But here it's saying that On was named On because he was defined by this status, this limbo status. That's what it's saying. Shiyashav v'aninut. What about his name, his father's name, Pelet? Also a very interesting name. I don't know anyone named On or Pelet. Maybe in Israel. I wouldn't put it past Israel. That there's some name, someone named Pelet. A door company? Maybe Delet.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No.
Pelet, I don't know. Pelet, I'm sure there's some, but... if there's a Nimrod out there, then there's definitely a Pelet. Yeah, there are Nimrods, that's what I'm saying. Either way, it hasn't taken on. I'm sure at some point it'll have its day. But so what does Pelet mean? Shinasu lo Pelaot. What's a Pelet? Oh, wonder. Interesting, drush on the word Pelet, not the same word. But Pelaot, wonders. We'll have to explain what these wonders are, what wonders happen to On. And then Bnei Reuven, very interestingly, notice how it says Ben Reuven here. Almost as if the word Ben Reuven is referring only to On Ben Pelet, Ben Reuven. When really the pasuk said Bnei Reuven, which refers to also Dathan and Avira. Mefarshim asked this question, Torah Tanya talks about that. That Ben Reuven, what does it mean? Ben Reuven, Ben Shera'a Vehevin. I talked about this last week. That the month of Tammuz is the month of Re'iyah, the month of seeing. That's when the Meraglim went around the Eretz Yisrael and looked at the land of Israel. It's Reuven's month. Okay, Vehevin, and they understood. They looked and they understood. I think I talked about that by the Sfas Emes. The juxtaposition between this Parsha and the end of last week's Parsha. What's the end of last week's Parsha? And last week's Parsha, remember? Very important. Tzitzis. What does it say? You should look at the tzitzis and you should be reminded of all the mitzvos. How do we look at the things around us? So here also, they didn't just look at things around them, they also understood the things around them. That's what it potentially could mean, the juxtaposition there. There's food for thought, fodder for a drasha there. Amar Rav, his name was not On. Amar Rav, Rav said, On ben Peles, ishto hitzilato. When it came to On's life, his wife saved him. Happy wife, happy life, right? If you have a wife that's going to save your life, so then you'll be okay. Ishto hatzilato. What happened? Amrale. She said, now listen to the, think about the nature of the argument here. I found the nature of this argument very fascinating. My nafkamina lachmina says On ben Pelet's wife. We don't know who her name is. Right? It's very unfortunate. We don't know who her name is. I can imagine there'd be little, you know, Mrs. Ones running around now if we knew her name. The truth is that we know things about Sarah, and we don't name our children Sarah, not many people at least. So who knows? But either way, says On ben Pelet's wife. It's almost like it's very fascinating because when we think about Midrashim, we often look at Midrashim as an interpretation of context clues that tell us what happened. Here, it's almost like there's a blank canvas, right? We know that On is part of Korach's rebellion at the beginning, and we know he's not punished at the end. Something happened in between. And I'm just thinking methodologically here. The rabbis could have looked at this scene and said, anything could have happened. Literally, anything could have persuaded him. Anything might have happened in that moment. Maybe he heard a good shiur from Moshe Rabbeinu. Maybe he, you know, came to his senses during davening one day. Anything could have happened. What did the rabbis, intuit must have happened? It must have been his wife. The first stop. The first possibility when a man changes his mind is we look to the wife, right? This is a bad but good example of what I'm talking about that I'm into weirdly, and I know it's weird, but I just find the psychology of them fascinating. I'm into crime documentaries. I don't know if people are into these things. They've become very popular. And I'm, I guess I'm part of the trend. And whenever something bad happens, whenever somebody, is a victim of a crime, the first people they look to are the spouse. Spouse, girlfriend, boyfriend, they always look to that from them first. Because they're the closest points of contact. So when the rabbis look at Onan Palace, they see that something changed. They look to the first point of contact. It must have been his wife. Must have been his wife, this time for the better. That's why it was a bad example, but a good example to show first point of contact. But it was a bad example because it's the opposite. So here, they say that the wife must have done something. What did she do? So says the Medrash, says the Gemara, she says to Omer and Palace, my nafalamina, what is the practical ramification of what you're doing right now? What's going to happen? Imar Rabbah, if he is your master, then ant talmida, then you'll be the student. V'imar Rabbah, ant talmida, then you'll be the student. Well, who's she talking about? The Gemara, the measure is actually more explicit than the Gemara. If Moshe is right, so then you'll be Moshe's student. And if Korach's right, then you'll be Korach's student. What do you have to gain from this, Own? What are you doing this for? What is the nature of that argument? It's not a very value-based argument.
You're not bettering yourself.
It's a very pragmatic argument. Mm-hmm. Bettering yourself, definitely not better. You're not going to better yourself either way. It's just talking about what position. Are you going to get a raise? Are you going to be promoted? You're not going to be promoted. If you're not going to be promoted, so what do you care? If he was going to be promoted, then what? Let's say Korach would have said to Own, if you join with me, I'll make you the Minister of Defense. If you join with me, I'll make you, a Vice President. So then it would be justified. What do you mean? Ant Talmida or Ant Talmida, you're going to be the student either way. And if he wasn't just a student, then I would be okay. So let's keep reading because I think she's playing games. I don't think she really means this army. I think she's playing games. Amar Allah, he says to her, my Avid, what am I supposed to do? Listen to Owen's such a weak, an argument of weakness. Right here, listen to this argument. It's fascinating. My Avid Have, the Eitzah, sorry, my Avid, what should I do? Havai Be'etza. I was there at the council and board meeting, right, at City Hall. I was talking to them. We had this meeting. Vishtabile Bahadaihu, and I swore to them. What is Rashi? Well, Rashi later on we'll see says, I swore to them that I'll be on their side. I'll be with them. So what is Owen's response? What do you want? I made a promise. You made a promise? That's your argument? You promised them you'd do a bad thing, so now you're going to do a bad thing? Really? Right, so you can see the extreme foolishness of that argument. Right, just because you told somebody you were going to do something, therefore you should do something wrong? Because I gave them my word that I was going to rob the bank, so then I had to do it. That obviously doesn't work in a court of law. So what kind of argument is that? And what is her response? Amralei, Yadana Zekula Kanishta Kadishta Ninhu. I know that the entire Jewish people are Kanishta Kadishta. I don't know if I'm saying that right or not. What is she saying? They're all holy. Where do we have that phrase from? That's Korach's own phrase. Right? He said, Ki kol ha'edah kulam kidoshim v'sacham Hashem. Owen Ben Pel's wife is saying the same phrase they're using to make an opposition against him. But in what way? What is she saying? They're all holy. So this is the machlokas between the Marsha and Rashi. We'll get to it in a second. What exactly she's trying to say. But then what happens? Does she convince him or not? Obviously she does. Any other votes? Let's see what the end of the story says. She says to him, wait, what did he say? He didn't say anything. He was quiet. Amrale, Tov de Anamasil Nalach, you just sit here, I'm going to save you. That's what she says. How do they translate that here? She says, sit for I will save you. Yeah. you just sit tight. I'm going to save you. How does she do that? Ashkise chamra v'arvise v'agnise gavai. What does that mean? Let's look at the translation on the back of the sheet. She gave him wine to drink and caused him to become drunk and laid him on a bed inside their tent. So who won the argument? Really, nobody. They went back and forth. They traded a few jabs. And they said, you just sit here, drink this. And that was the end of it. He just got drunk. I mean, the arguments didn't work. The arguments didn't work. She just got him drunk. And then, what did she do? She prevented everybody from coming in to gather own Ben Pelos up. What exactly she did is unclear. It says in the actual text, V'sas harta l'mazye, kol da'asa chaze hadar adahach v'hachi iblu l'hu. She was in some ways promiscuous with her hair. She let her hair down. She exposed her hair. We know by the sota that letting your hair down was an expression of promiscuity. So it could be that they saw her promiscuity and they said, oh, we don't want any part of that. Kind of an interesting thing. The people, as part of Korach v'Hadasso, came to gather up own in opposition to Moshe Rabbeinu and said, whoa, whoa, whoa. We don't want to get involved with anybody sinning. We don't want to be part of any sinners over here. And it's a very strange thing, right? So I equate this, my first instinct was to equate this to smoking. Anyone familiar with this? You know, when it comes to bin Adam v'chavero, when it comes to doing things wrong against another person, we think we're in control. We think we can do whatever we want. And for some reason, when it comes to bin Adam l'makom, that's when we're very careful. If you were to tell those who smoke, right, those Jews, firm Jews who smoke, if you were to tell them that there is pig fat inside of a cigarette, what would they do? They would stop smoking immediately. But why don't they stop smoking? They know it's bad for them. They think that they're in control. They think, oh, I know my own body, or I know so-and-so. I can deal with them. I can deal with myself. As long as it's something which is within their understanding, within our understanding, we do the same thing. So then we can tell us, oh, we can understand, we can justify it, we can sort of finagle around the corner. We can round the corner a little bit. But when it comes to something which we don't understand, it's something Hashem told us to do. No ifs, buts, or exceptions, we won't do it. So here also, it seems almost as if they're having sort of that bifurcated mentality, that dissonance where they're saying, Moshe Rabbeinu, we can take on Moshe Rabbeinu. But Gila Arayos, no, we can't do Gila Arayos. I mean, that's out of bounds. Right? So they're separating themselves between that which they think is justified and that which they think that isn't justified. So it's kind of an interesting dissonance there, but we're not really talking about that. What exactly was Own Ben Pelos' wife's recommendation? When she says back to Own, we really need a name for her. When Mrs. Own says to Own, Mrs. Ben Pelos, if that's her last name, when she says to Own, don't you know that everybody's holy? What is she trying to accomplish there? He had just said, what do you want? I swore to them. And she says, yeah, but isn't everybody holy? What is the back and forth there? He says, I swore to them. She says, yeah, but everybody's holy. So Marsha says, Yesh Lefarish Lefim Masha Amrala El. Shamrale. Mainak Lachmina. Imar Rabba Ant Vichule Heshiv Be'etza Yishtaba Badayu. Sha'anihu Ke'echad Mehem. Meaning, what was Own's response? She says, what's the difference? You're going to be a student either way. But he says, no, I'm part of their group. I am one of the powerful people in the group. I swore to them. They took me in. They gave me a position on the board. I swore to them. I was sworn in, if you will. V'evshar sh'ani ayeh rabba. And it could very well be that I'll be promoted. I'm in the group. You know, when you're doing enough positive activities, when you're good enough for the group, so then they'll promote you. So that's what he says to them. That's what he says to her. V'alzeh heishiv alo. And then she responds to him. V'yadana dekula kanishta kadishta kamosach. Don't you know, it doesn't matter what you do, everybody's on the same level. Everybody's holy. Just because you swore doesn't mean that anything's going to happen to you. This, by the way, happens all the time in cults. Are you familiar with cult mentality? They tell you, do this, that, and the other thing. I did a report on Scientology when I was in college. So because they told me I had to report on another religion, and I wasn't going to go into anything that's the Avodah Zarah, so I went to Scientology. It's not really religion. They let me do it. Either way, I learned all about Scientology.
Wow.
It's a very scary place. I walked into the reception. They saw my uncle. They're like, do you know where you are? I was like, yes. I would like a tour, please. And either way. So in Scientology, you pay, and they tell you, you're raising the ranks, but in the end of the day, nothing ever happens. You never actually get any kind of promotion where you make money, you only ever pay money. You just pay, and you never really raise, you know, you never become in any level of prominence. So, and that happens with all cults. They tell you, oh, just do one more thing, and then you'll be this, and you do one more thing, and you'll be that. Never happens. Right? That's part of the psychological manipulation that happens. So this is Owen's response there. They told me that I was going to be promoted. If I just stick with it long enough, they'll promote me. So she says, don't you know that part of their platform is everybody's on the same level? Not going to get into socialism here, but yeah, we're all the same. We're all the same. So don't you know it's not going to happen? Who's to say that you're going to be the lucky one to be promoted? Everybody's the same. What does it matter? So that's the Maharsha's explanation. At the end of the day, it's a stalemate. He thinks he's going to be promoted. She says you're not going to be promoted. But the problem with that is, at least not the problem, it's obviously a valid argument, but the problem with that is it's very transactional. It's very pragmatic. If you do this, then you'll do this. But if you're not going to get that, so then it's not worth your while. What's the point? You're not going to be promoted. If you were promoted, fine. But you're not going to be promoted, so you might as well not do it. That's a very transactional argument. It's very pragmatic. It's not really like Mrs. Owen is making any real argument. She's just saying you're not going to get anything. It's not worth your investment. According to that, maybe it's worthwhile that we don't know her name because it's not that much of a value-based activity. Right? It's not that much of a righteousness that she has. It's just transactional. If you were to be promoted, so then, yeah, it'll be worthwhile. It's not worth your while because, you know, you're not going to be promoted at all. It does make sense, but it's also lucky that it makes sense because if he would have had a signed document that said, Owen, if you join with us in our position, you'll be promoted to the vice president. So then what would Mrs. Owen say? I guess you're right. Go ahead. Right? So that's not so righteous. It makes sense. It's a good pragmatic argument, but it's only pragmatic. And in Torah, we don't value pragmatism, we value value, right? Something which is intrinsically valued. So let's look at Rashi. Rashi says that the words kula kanishta kadisha doesn't mean just, look, you're not going to be promoted. She says, this is in Rashi, source number 5. He goes through imar rabbi, minasech, moshe mikol makma tatamim, minkorch minasech, tatamim, ma'ala, lach besarazu, what do you need to do for this? You're not going to be promoted anyway. Havei Be'esa, he says to her that I was part of the council. Ani ha'yisi iman Be'esa. V'nishbati lehem, I swore to them, she'im kre'uni ye'lechim lehem, that if they call me up for duty, I'll be there for them. So how am I supposed to go against them? She says, trust me, kula kenishta kadishin. The Jewish people are holy people. In what way? Kulam tenuim u'kadoshim. V'lo yikantu elai im ani pru'a. Says Mrs. Owen to Owen. You're right. You made a promise. But you should know that within this pragmatism, within this opposition that you're trying to usurp Moshe's power, you should know that the obligations of holiness, the obligations of sanctity and modesty still apply. And we can't override those obligations for the sake of some kind of transactional pursuit or aspiration. Meaning, she was goading him on the first time. The first question was, is there any practical benefit of this? And he said, yeah, there's practical benefit because I gave them my word. And my word, I have to follow. There's a transactional value in giving your word. But then she says, Kulam Kedoshim, everyone's holy. You should know that there's still an incumbent holiness upon everybody. And then she says that, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to be promiscuous and they're not going to want to come inside. Meaning that even within their pragmatism, they're still going to know the difference between what's holy and what's not holy. Now, it's not a full-fledged argument because then she has to get him drunk, right? So it still doesn't work. But the point is that there's still a responsibility towards doing the right thing regardless of the transactional value, regardless of the fact that you gave your word and the fact that maybe you should keep your word because that's a good thing to do, to keep your word. more important than the pragmatism, more important than any transactional value that you have in being part of this movement and fulfilling your responsibility towards them, is being holy. And that's why the response of her is to sit by the window, be promiscuous, in order to sort of show that they're not going to come in if I'm promiscuous. And it's unclear exactly how this fits into the whole narrative. But what I find fascinating is how this connects back to what Own ultimately is saved by. Why is Own saved? Not because of this argument. That's one aspect of it. That's her argument. But the argument doesn't really work. What does work? Getting her drunk. It reminds me a little bit of Esther in the Megillah. What works? Why is it that Haman is killed? Well, maybe Ahasuerus had a little loose loose screws. But what exactly triggered Haman's death?
The fact that there was a party and he let his guard down a little bit.
Haman's death.
Right.
What party are you talking about?
Well, when he and Esther and Ahasuerus.
Okay, and then what happened?
And there's a little bit of frivolity.
Okay. What was the argument?
Pushed on him. I don't want to.
Oh, okay.
He pushed against the couch.
Okay, good. Very good. What happened? What happens, if you remember, is Esther makes an argument to Ahasuerus that there's somebody trying to kill my people. And what does Ahasuerus say? Me who zev yezehu. And then she says, Haman harazeh. So does Ahasuerus then say, okay, let's kill him? No, he walks out. It seems almost as if Ahasuerus is mulling it over. He's thinking about it. What really is the death nail to Haman?
That when he comes back,
when he comes back in, he sees Haman on Esther. If it wasn't for Haman falling on Esther, so then who knows what would have happened? Who knows what would have happened afterwards to Haman? Who knows if he would have still maintained his position? So here also, she makes a good argument, but if it wasn't for what happened next, who knows what Own would have done? Because then she gets him drunk to make sure he doesn't go anywhere. And this, I believe, is part of the word, the name Own. If you look at the Ben Yehoyada, the Ben Ishkai, on this Gemara, he says, Ve'on sheyashav ba'aninus. Perush kemo onein, like a person who is an onein. She'eno avel mamash, he's not fully mourning. V'gam en osik v'mitzel, so he's also not a mourner. Right? He's a mourner, but he's not a mourner. He's in this limbo zone where he can't do anything. You can't do anything as a normal person doing mitzvot, and you can't do anything as a mourner sitting shiva. You're just in that limbo zone. You can't do anything. That's why he's called on, because he's an onein, he's in limbo. He doesn't do anything. Kain hu. So to him, lo halach eto Moshe Rabbeinu alav hashalom levakish mena mechila. He doesn't go to Moshe and ask forgiveness. Ve'lo halach im karach hadas, but he also doesn't go to Korach. He just sits there and does nothing. He just doesn't do anything. So that's why he's called Own, because he does nothing. He's in limbo. What does Mrs. Own do to make sure he stays in limbo? He gets him drunk. Because who knows what happens when you're exposed to the social construct which would bring you back in before. You think about, God forbid, alcoholics. They go through, Alcoholics Anonymous. They go through the whole thing, and then they see their old buddies again. There's a big, recidivation. I don't know what's called that because it's not jail, but there's a big relapse risk there. You fall back into your environment. She says, okay, I've given him an argument, but who's to say that's going to save him? Who's to say that he's going to see his friends by the street and say, yeah, there's still Kedusha, we still have to be holy people, etc. Who's to say that's going to work? He's going to see his friends, he's going to say, hey, Own, let's go. We're going to party with Korach. We're going to whatever. So he could fall right back into it. He says the best thing for him to do is to do nothing. And this is the thing that I wanted to focus on. Interestingly enough, he says, Pla'ot, the wonders that Hashem did for him, is that the people, when they saw Mrs. Own, they didn't barge right into the door and say, we don't care about you. Where's Own? They didn't say that. That's part of the wonders. But the point that I wanted to make is that oftentimes when it comes to a struggle, especially a political struggle, which seems like is here, especially political struggle, we always feel the need. We have an instinct to figure out who's right and who's wrong. We have an instinct. It's an instinct of ours. We want to make sense of the world. We want to figure out what is true and what is false. Right? You see court cases on television. You see articles in the news. You try to figure out what's right, what's wrong. You see a Supreme Court decision. What's right and what's wrong? Figure it out quickly before I have too much dissonance in my mind. Maybe this is right, maybe that's right. Figure it out. Is this right or that right? I got to choose a side. So it brings closure, it brings a certain semblance of serenity in your mind. But sometimes the best thing to do is to do nothing. Sometimes the best thing to do is to not get involved at all. And for Own, in this moment, the best thing to do is not be involved at all. She saved him by making him an Oni. She saved him by making him say, I'm not going to do anything. Stay in bed. And sometimes we have to realize that the best activity is no activity. The best choice is no choice. The best decision we can make is to not get involved where we're not supposed to be involved. Leave Moshe Rabbeinu's fight up to Moshe Rabbeinu. He can take care of himself. Right? You don't have to choose. You don't have to go fight for Moshe Rabbeinu. And you don't have to go fight for Korah. Just stay in bed. And that's a weird concept because we typically say, you got to go do something. You have to. This time, don't get involved. You see someone post something on Facebook, you don't have to respond. You don't have to have an opinion on every news article. And I think that's part of the issue that we have. We feel like because there are so many modes of communication, we feel like we're not only we have the permission to, but we have the obligation to give our opinion. Because look at all these ways that I can say it. Look how many other people are giving their opinion. And really, the world doesn't need your opinion on every single issue. Right? You're not the king of the world. You're not the president. You don't have to make a decision. The only thing that can come from it is creating sides. That you'll be in opposition to somebody. You'll be in promotion of somebody else at the expense of your friends, the expense of other people. Sometimes the best thing to do is to step back. Not to literally get drunk, but to sit back in your proverbial bed and say, I'm not going to get involved in this one. This is not my fight to fight. Some people, when you're in your position, when it's under your auspices to take care of a decision, then you have to make that decision. That's your responsibility. But if you're an outsider to it, if you're an Own Ben Peles to the argument between Moshe and Korah, just stay out of it. It's not your fight to fight. And sometimes the best decision is no decision. That's how she saves Own, by getting him drunk, by making him understand this is not the time to do anything. Just stay in bed and stay out of it. And that's the sort of the last thing that I want to say, is that we have the options in our toolkit are not only two options, yes, do it, or no, don't do it. Sometimes there's the option of abstaining. Sometimes the third option is the proper option, to just not get involved. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't get involved in important things. I'm saying that if it's not your fight to fight, so sometimes the proper thing is to not get involved. That doesn't mean you're weak, and that doesn't mean you're a coward. It means this is not my responsibility, and it's not my job to divide people more than they're already divided. Let other people take care of it if it's not my responsibility. Okay, I've spoken enough. Everyone have a good day and a good week. Think about Own Ben Peles, and more importantly, Mrs. Own Ben Peles. All right, we got to come up with her name, and we have to come up with the Levy Choir name. Those are our jobs for next week. Okay.